How's everybody doing? This is a very special guest, Todd Robert Anderson. I'm once again five episodes in a row. I'm hostless. Good news is I got a line on somebody who's supposed to come and record with me tomorrow. So I'm very excited about that. But in the meantime, I had a concept for these very special guests talking to himself type episodes. I was thinking about how much I love music and how music has influenced me in a lot of ways inspired my own art, my acting, my writing. Often I write with music being a creative type. And when I say creative type, I don't mean somebody who has a really creative mind and create new computer systems or cures for diseases or anything that benefits the world in any way. I mean creative mind basically means, a guy who doesn't, want a job and likes to hang around and sort of jack it, both metaphorically and literally. So that's me. I'm a creative mind. And being a creative person, I run in a lot of creative circles with other people who also enjoy masturbation and mutual masturbation and all those things that artists enjoy. So throughout the course of my life, I've had some personal relationships with musicians and I've loved their music. Not because of the personal relationships, because of their music. And I'm always sort of, this is going to sound weird, but I'm sort of blown away by how talented these people are. I mean, these aren't hack. I got some neighbors, and they're working it out. They rehearse every day in their garage, and they're doing it's like one of those thrash metal bands, which seems kind of retro. I guess that's kind of cool. And it's got they have that voice. It's like, and some people dig that. It's not my thing. That it may seem like I'm an old man. I'm just an old fart of a guy. But I'm not. I never liked that music, even when I was a kid. But that's neither here nor there. What I'm talking about is the musicians that I love who are friends of mine or I've had communication with, personal encounters with, and found out, we're simpatico on certain things and that's why they're talented. But I think also their music speaks to me because, we're of a similar mindset, if that makes sense. Anyway, I was going to do a whole show where I just talked about musicians that I've enjoyed, been fans of, and had any kind of personal encounter with, even if it's just communicating via Twitter. But then I realized, there's actually a lot of these people in my life, and I was thinking, I would do a story and then find out if it would be cool for me to put their music into the podcast, as samples of what they do, and that's going to take a while to get that all together. And I also realized that if I do that, that's like a 4 or 5 hour podcast. It would be huge. And I know some people really actually dig podcasts that are 5 hours long, but to me, they should be between a half hour and 90 minutes tops. And granted, I've had ones that are even shorter. I mean, I think there's nothing wrong with a 5-10 minute podcast, although that's more of like a sketchy. If it's 5 or 10 minutes, you're in sketch comedy territory. Once you get into 30 to an hour and a half, I think you're in sort of a more thought provoking, sort of personal thing, and people can kind of get more into you, into your state. But I think like 4 hours is stretching it. You know, when you go to the movies and a movie is 3 hours long, there are so few movies that warrant that running time. The Godfather and The Godfather 2 come to mind. I'll go with Shortcuts. I'll say Shortcuts. And outside of that, I'm trying to think, is anything else 3 hours that's worth it? Yeah, no. A lot of people would say Gone with the Wind. Lawrence of Arabia. I'll give Lawrence of Arabia because that's still kind of that stood the test of time. Unlike, I mean, and you know, if you like film history, you certainly have to see Gone with the Wind, and there's a lot of marvelous things about it. But it's too long, and that movie's what, like 4 hours. I mean, that's too long. It's too long, and that's what I'm saying. I don't want a podcast, you know, because I can talk about these people endlessly. So I thought I'd talk about them individually. And I'm starting with – and this guy, it was easy to get in touch with him and ask his permission and to use some of his music. And he said yes, and well, I'll get into this later. He gave me permission to use a couple of different albums. So I'm going to play some tracks from those. And we'll see, you know, I've known this guy my whole life since we were kids. We've been best buds since we were little. We live on opposite sides of the country now. When we get together, you know, it's like no time has passed. It's one of those things, you know, when you grow up with somebody and you're that close and you share all the adventures of growing up, you know, from being a little kid into prepubescence, into coming of age, you know, all that stuff that's so potent, you know. And when you share it with certain people and you get back together with them, you know, it's there's a connection that, and it's effortless to reestablish, you know. I mean, sometimes, you know, when you get together with somebody who even you dated or slept with in college, it's weird talking to those people. But when you're talking about someone from your childhood, it's like that you were close to, you sit down, it's as if no time has passed. I mean, you can see that each other are older, but it's like you still went through that, and nothing's ever going to change that. And that's one of those neat, I don't know. That's one of the things I like about life is that, you know, so we went through it together. Anyway, I haven't said his name yet. His name is Darren Buck. If you go back a number of Toncasts ago, I can't remember which episode it is, but I believe the host was Franklin F. Mint. And he played a track that Darren and I recorded together in junior high at Canobie Lake Park in New Hampshire. It was Puff the Magic Dragon. I have no idea if I'll ultimately get in copyright trouble for posting Puff the Magic Dragon as recorded by Darren and me. But, you know, c'est la vie. Whatever. Que sera, sera. If I get in trouble, I'll remove it. But I would imagine that I'm not making money off of this, so I don't know why they would care. But you know, people are weird legally, you know, people who seem perfectly reasonable, like, hide behind walls of lawyers. And then, you know, who knows what can happen? They stop being reasonable because their lawyers tell them they shouldn't be reasonable. But that's the litigious nature of our modern culture here in the first world. Oh, it's so good. So much better than the third world, you guys. Anyway, Darren and I grew up together. We were in elementary school, you know, kindergarten on up. As years went by, we got closer and closer. We had some play dates and stuff like that, but we requested those when we were little through our parents. You know, a lot of times parents thrust play dates upon their kids out of convenience or just they want their kids to hang out because they like hanging out. But Darren and I, we requested each other. I love his parents, and I'm sure he loves my parents, and you know, our parents get along, but they weren't, you know, famously close. They weren't the friends we were, and that's kind of neat. You know, that's like one of those first those first forays, even, you know, as an elementary school kid, it's one of your first forays into independence. It's like, I like that guy or I like that girl. And it's not because your parents told them you have to, or your parents needed to shuffle you off to somebody's house so they could go see a horror movie or something. It's just you decide, I want to hang out with that kid. And then you say, hey, mom, I want to invite that kid over. And that Darren was definitely the guy who I ultimately became closest with over those years. And we, you know, connected right away. And we had, you know, Sunday school and all that stuff together. So we kind of hassled through the Catholic Church together. I think he's still, I don't know. I mean, he was never uber religious. I got to ask him about that. I don't know if he's still, I think he's like one of those Christmas church goers, you know? I don't know. I'll ask him. I'll find out later. But I'm sure he knows that I'm not into the church anymore. Anyway, so we grew up together. And also, you know, those years in junior high and high school, where we're finding girls and all that stuff. And going through that stuff with somebody, it's like you're war buddies by the end of it. You went through somebody nobody else can possibly understand. And everybody goes through their version of it. But, you know, we were in a specific time. We're Gen Xers. You know, we saw the dawn of home entertainment, and we saw the dawn of the internet. And we remember a world with rotary telephones. We remember a world where there were only three television stations. And the generations that came after that, that's just weird old man history. That's just sort of amazing. I mean, I don't think there's been a generation since Generation X that has experienced that since probably the late 1900s, when that generation saw the automobile take over the world. Before the automobile, it was horses and carriages, and then all of a sudden the automobile happens and the whole world changes. I mean, think about it. We all just take cars for granted. Car is something you need. Car is something you got to hassle with, something you got to get. Some people love cars. Some people, like me, don't, you know, love cars, but we need cars. And I certainly love what cars do, but it's not the car itself. I just like being able to get around quickly. But to imagine a world before that, when you think about it, when I think about it, it sounds incredibly old-timey. You know, it sounds like, wow, how did they get by? They must have been so bored if they didn't have TV and shit. And now, you know, there are young people who are looking at my generation going, holy shit, how did you look stuff up when you went to a library? Oh, what if they didn't have the book in it? Yeah. Well, yeah, all that stuff. So, it's a different time. So Darren and I were, you know, that generation, and we came up together and we went through so much together. And he was always a great, great singer. I was always an actor. So when they did in our high school, they had in the fall, they would have what people called a straight play, which was kind of a funny name, because we were also all the people who did the straight plays were referred to as theater fags. So those were kind of, it was an odd juxtaposition. That's all I'm saying. But they were called straight plays. And then, of course, in the spring, there was a musical. That's another kind of funny thing when you think about it. The play that's not a musical is straight, and the musical is musical, you guys. It's just funny. Anyway, I would get larger parts in the non-musical productions at the school, and then the musicals, Darren would have huge parts because he had a great voice. He was also a very good actor and a lot of fun. Actually, our senior year, he got the lead in both the straight play, which is Taming of the Shrew, and the lead in the musical, which is 42nd Street. He was a very talented guy. And I was a little jealous. I'll be honest with you. I was jealous. Although, you know, really when it came down to it, I mean, I was jealous mostly that he got cast in the lead in this straight play and I didn't, because I was the lead the year before. I guess they were spreading the wealth, but they didn't communicate But, you know, Darrow was good. He was the right man for the job. And, you know, and it was Taming of the Shrew. It was Shakespeare. And I was never good with Shakespeare. And I'm sort of glad that I didn't have all that work that he had to do to play the lead in that. I was Grumio, I think, was the character's name. I was just his assistant, you know. So I was just like a jokey, funny guy. It was the right casting. Darren was, of course, wonderful. And then in 42nd Street, I never wanted to play the lead in the musical because I'm not a good singer. I love singing and I love music, as I've said, but I lousy singer. Anyway, Darren played the lead in that, and I played a supporting role. I actually had a number which went well, I thought. It was a great experience. And then the cast parties, of course, where we'd stay up all night, not on drugs, not drinking, you know, we just stayed up all night and got punch drunk on sleep deprivation, which was hilarious. And we'd run around our small town at dawn after, you know, we'd been up all night and with all our theater buddies. And those times were, I don't know, they're just special and amazing. And then we graduated high school, of course, and Darren got, I think, 3 awards for being in musicals and plays, and another guy, Tom, got 1 award. I got no awards. I mean, for theater, I did get a headmaster's award, which was nice. He had 2 of those that he gave out, 1 to me and 1 to another guy, and it was basically saying, these are the students who I thought, you know, did the best all-around job as a student at this school. And, you know, at the time I was very hurt that I did not get a theater award, which maybe that sounds petty, but fuck. I was 18, you guys. Give me a break. And now, of course, you know, as I said in my last podcast, I'm not a fan of awards shows anyway, so who cares? But at the time, you know, it meant something to me. And the Headmaster Award I was sort of weird about, but in retrospect, I realized that really was a great award. And the guy who, the headmaster, his name was Dick Wakely. He was just a good guy, Mr. Wakely. And I got to know him because I was a janitor. In when I was in college, I would be a summertime custodian at the high school, and Dick Wakely was just a funny guy. He was like a avid gambler, and we'd go to Vegas. There was all this stuff I didn't know about him because he was the principal. He had to, you know, be hardcore. And he had, you know, his assistant, headmaster, Mr. Marlboro, who was the real badass. But Mr. Wakely was, I don't know, you know, I always thought he was an all right guy. We actually got into it at a pep rally one time because he told me to shut up. And I basically said to him, shut up. This is a pep rally. Why do you want everyone to be quiet at a pep rally? And I had a bunch of friends on the football team. I was genuinely yelling and screaming and trying to get the crowd going, and they were subdued because they didn't care about football because it was an apathetic student body. But he told me to shut up. He thought I was being disrespectful. And we got into it over that. And he ultimately decided, you know, he didn't say this until after I graduated, but he ultimately said that I was absolutely right. But, you know, you can't say that to a kid when, you know, you're the disciplinarian. Anyway, back to Darren. So we graduated and we both went, he went to Syracuse University and I went to NYU, and he started a band. He was a graphic artist major, but he started a band. He really wanted to be a musician, not a musical theater person, but in a band, like a rock and roll outfit. And he started a band. When they started it, it was called Witch's Brew, which was named after a Jimi Hendrix lyric or song or album. I can't remember which. My Jimi Hendrix is rusty, you guys. But anyway, they started this. It was sort of a funk rock hybrid Very fun music. You know what? I'm going to go ahead and play one of their songs for you right now. Here's a song from the band. Well, they changed the name. Okay. It started as Witch's Brew, but they ultimately changed it to Professor Spoon. So here's a tune from Professor Spoon. I'll tell you why they changed the name after the song.
At the 8 o'clock bell, down the tall hall, thick ammonia smell. Cold blue paper from the mimeograph. Passed out the test and gave a little laugh. Cupped his dry hands and said, "Time's up. There's candy in the box if you measure up."
I loved this band. I loved the music. And I was listening to it on an album. Their first album was called Push to Start. That track is from an album called 127 Somerset, which is where they recorded it. It's much more professional recording than a Push to Start, although Push to Start is a fun album too. I don't know, just great sound. Love the band and love the sound. And I was listening to it on CDs, and then I went to visit them up in Syracuse, and they did this cover of the Jeffersons before they would do, after their first set, they'd end it with a cover of the Jeffersons. And, they were playing this frat party. It was a huge frat party. It was crazy. And, which is fine, because they're not, they're not necessarily a frat boy band. But the people of the fraternity I thought were really cool. So they kind of flew in the face of fraternity stereotypes, I guess. But it was a lot of fun and just gorgeous. There were a lot of pretty women at Syracuse University. So that was fun. And he handed me a tambourine, and I started banging on the tambourine in the audience, and all these people were dancing around me and they were calling me Tambourine Boy. And that sort of stuck. Another funny story about that, Tambourine Boy, this really gorgeous blonde girl came up to me when they were on their break, and I still had the tambourine, and she looked at me and was just like really smiling. It was like, "Do you know the band?" And all I had to do was say yes. That's all I needed to do, and I would have been in, and I could have gotten lucky. But I couldn't resist saying, "No, I'm an internationally renowned tambourine player." Which at the time sounded like a hilarious joke to me, but she looked at me like I was an asshole and never talked to me again. So I screwed that up. But anyway, it was a great show. And then after we graduated college, they came down to New York City and gave it a go there. So they started playing all these clubs in New York. And I would go to every show, and I loved it. Loved it. And I brought in a bunch of my NYU guys, and they all loved it. And and I'm not a dancer, but we would, do that like white boy jump up and down dance thing. And it was awesome. I promised before to explain why they changed their name from Witch's Brew to Professor Spoon. I actually went to see a concert in Boston. And if you heard that, that was my phone letting me know I got a text message. I don't know if the mic is picking that up. Anyway, I apologize. I was at the show. The show was an Alice in Chains show in Boston, and there were flyers for another band, and it was called Witch's Brew. And I actually called him from the venue, and I said, "Are you guys playing here?" And he's like, "No." And after they did, and this is before the internet. Then they did a little research and realized they weren't the only ones who called themselves Witch's Brew. So that's why they changed the name to Professor Spoon. They had to come up with a new name because there were too many outfits with Witch's Brew as a moniker. Let's listen to this next song. Which is one of my, I love this song, and this is like a mellow song. But I dig what it's about. It's called The Knowledge. Listen to it. All right. Just listen to this. And I'll tell you this awesome Halloween story, after the tune.
Simmering black and deep sedan, silent driver, never letting go. Go out where he's been. Turn down the radio sound of a soccer game. Taking his cue from a street name. Through the shift lever in the drive and fell back onto the road again. Time to absorb all the love,
I don't know. It's just a beautiful song. You can really hear how great a singer Darren is, you know? There was this one Halloween where Professor Spoon played a show. I think it was on Halloween proper or the night before Halloween. You know, it was whatever. It was, you know, it's in Manhattan, near Washington Square Park is the club they played a lot. I think it was called the Red Lion or the Lion's Den. So it was Lion's Den. Maybe it was Lion's Den. Yeah, I always got those two confused because I used to go see this Irish trad band at a place called the Red Lion, but then there was the Lion's Den where Darren played. I'm pretty sure I'm getting that right. Anyway, so they played the Lion's Den on Halloween, and there were, you know, all these people in costume, and I'm just dancing away, and there was this little I assume it was a woman. It was hard to tell because very small, petite. Dressed as a skeleton from head to toe. It was like a full bodysuit head to toe. And just we were dancing. I assume it was a woman. I could be wrong. Could have been a boy, a man. I don't not 100% sure. But and I'm not a bisexual or at least as far as I know at this point, but it was one of the greatest nights, like dancing with the stranger and the skeleton. It very sexy, very sexy dancer, and liked how goofy I was and a terrible dancer I was. And just, I don't know. It was, I don't know. I wonder who that was. I actually went to ask the skeleton on a date right after the band was done, but I looked around and the skeleton was gone. It was gone. That's so sad. Anyway, check out this song. This is another song I really like. It's sort of a deep cut on Trust Fund Kids, and that kind of thing speaks to me. It's called Oblatorious.
I can't stand this constitution when all the pretty boys go free. A low dried haircut and collection and shirts and made in Italy.
Yeah.
dig that tune. Dig that tune. This is really heartbreaking because ultimately, due to, I'm not really sure, and it's really none of my business, but I think, you know, certain members of the band were, now that I think about it, I know a lot about it, why the band broke up, but one particular member was, I imagine there are substance abuse problems involved, but the main thing is that he was flaking out and blowing them off on rehearsals, and then he would show up late for gigs a couple times. In fact, he had promised to sing a tune at Darren's wedding with Darren, to play a tune that Darren would sing to for his wife at his wedding, and the guy didn't show up. So that's why Professor Spoon broke up. And that, that breaks my heart. In any event, they broke up, and that makes me sad. And I'll play one more song at the end from Spoon. The first one that I played, which was Skinner, it's called Skinner Box. And that's a neat song because it was inspired by my fifth grade elementary school teacher, who was just an idiot. There was a guy in my class that everybody called Scrapper, and my school teacher would bribe kids to shut up or do their work or whatever with candy. And then a lot of times he would sneak off and go to the bathroom, leaving us unattended. And one day he left, you know, us doing work so he could go to the bathroom. And Scrapper scaled the side of these tall, tall mobile cabinets where this guy kept the tin, like a coffee can or whatever, filled with candy. And Scrapper just said, "Hey, candy!" And just hucked the candy at all of us in the room. And, you know, it was pandemonium. And by the time this guy, my fifth grade teacher, his name was Mr. Skinner, came back, the place was a mess. We all got in a lot of trouble. But in any event, that's Skinner Box is, you know, inspired by that. And Skinner Box, I can't remember. Darren told me one time what the hell a Skinner Box is. It's, I don't know. It has something to do with something. Mythology, maybe? I don't know. Anyway, he married that, whatever that was, with, this actual story from our elementary school. In any event, that's what that song was. And I'll play one more song at the end, which is called Danny, which was written, I believe, by the flaky guy in the band. It's a great song, and kind of ironic for me because I wound up having an agent named Dan who ultimately abandoned me. Good guy. I still like my agent Dan, you know, as a person, but he kind of blew me off. And I had high hopes for my career, and I had it in my mind that, you know, we would be friends and sort of business partners forever. But he got an agency that was too big for a little guy like me, and good for him. He makes a lot more money, and that's awesome. But the song's called Danny, and it's about an agent, and you'll hear it at the end and see why I relate to it. In any event, then after Spoon broke up, Darren was in New York, and he joined a band called Seismic. It was a little different than Spoon because he was there. Well, actually, with Spoon, when it was Witch's Brew, he did audition for the band, and then he became a co-writer of lyrics, a lyricist for the band. He wrote some of the lyrics for some of the songs. In fact, one of the songs Oh, maybe I'll play that too. You know what? Maybe I'll play one more Spoon song. One of the songs is called Keep It Down. And I always like that song. And it's simply about a neighbor telling the kid neighbor to turn down the damn music. It's a good song. Here's Keep It Down.
Thank you.
a hilarious song, I think. It's a great song. In any event, I'll play the song Danny at the end to round out the podcast. Now, this band Seismic that Darren joined after Professor Spoon, it wasn't as good a band as Professor Spoon. It was more straightforward, popular rock and roll of the 90s. You can hear in Spoon the influences, the funk and the classic rock, and it's just Spoon was just super well realized. Seismic had some good tunes. One of which I believe was featured in a straight to video sequel to Cruel Intentions. There was like Cruel Intentions 2 or 3. There's a song that they did on that. But there's a bunch of their songs that I dig. And probably my favorite one is this one. And I don't know what the hell it's really about. I like the sound, and I really like the chorus. This is Queen of the Rodeo by Seismic featuring Darren Buck.
Thank you.
Okay. So, cool. I don't know. Let me know what you think. I dig that song, and there were a number of songs by Seismic. And I got to see Seismic play in a small club. I can't remember. It was like one of those basement music clubs in New York. It's kind of a shitty joint, and there wasn't anybody there. But it was great to see Darren sing. I just wish to me, Darren deserved more from the world as far as audience numbers than I got. Certainly with Spoon, and I guess Spoon ultimately was undercut by, you know, band members who were too flaky, which sucks, man. It's just heartbreaking. And you can hear, I mean, probably the best part of Seismic is Darren's vocals. And this is other song, and this is, and I'm playing this cause after Seismic, Darren sort of quit that and he teaches now at our high school. He's got a, soul band, called the Duke Baxter Band. I'm not going to play any of their tunes because they're covers, I'm not sure what the copyright things were, and Darren was like, we should be careful about that. So I'm not going to play that. But if you are on the East Coast, you know, look them up. I'm sure they have a website, Duke Baxter Band. You know, they play a lot. They play, you know, weddings and clubs and all that stuff. And I remember I asked Darren, you know, are you going to be writing any originals? And he said, I don't think so, because, you know, he loves soul. And he's like, there are all these great songs that already were written, and I don't know how to write something better than that. And it makes me really happy to sing those things. So that's what he's doing. And I think it's great. And it's awesome. I've seen them play. I've heard them. They're amazing. They're marvelous. And it's a lot of fun. But I do miss the, Darren, the lyricist and Darren, the rocker. Love the soul stuff. Love it. Love it. Love it. And actually I have a recording. I wish I could play it, but again, this copyright thing. But he did a demo and did a cover of At Last, and man, this guy's got pipes. I mean, for a man to sing At Last, you know, and nail it, that's, you know, that's something Rod Stewart would try, and like, it's embarrassing. But Darren does just, it'll break your heart. It'll break your heart. But this next song, which is from Seismic, I think really captures his vocal ability. And it's called Roses Never Die. It's kind of a sad song, but it's probably my favorite song. I mean, Queen of the Rodeos, Roses Never Die may be my favorite song. Maybe my favorite song. I go back and forth between the two. It depends on what mood I'm in. They're different, very different songs. They're very different songs, you guys. And don't judge me for waffling back and forth between what my favorite song is. Okay? All right. Anyway. This is Roses Never Die.
I wanna live forever. I state my claim for life. I wanna cross the sea someday. I wanna breathe tonight. Tonight. Separate lives. I state my case to you.
what I'm saying? I mean, if I was back east, I would probably be a roadie for the Duke Baxter Band and carrying drum kits and shit just so I could get into these weddings and hear the band play. Because I'm just a huge fan of Darren. And it's not just because, this is what I was trying to say at the beginning, it's not just because of his friendship. It's because I don't think, I mean, and you tell me, because I'm playing the songs, but I don't think that my point of view is necessarily skewed and wrong because I'm friends with the guy. I think he's genuinely talented. I think he's genuinely amazing. I thought that in high school. I mean, but I wasn't the only one. I mean, like chicks, he got a lot of girlfriends in high school. I did not, you know? And I think a lot of that had to do with, goddamn, guy could sing, you know? And if you can sing, chicks dig you. It's like a Pied Piper. But instead of attracting rats, you attract chicks, which is way better than pie. I don't. Who wants rats? You want the ladies. So anyway, after Seismic, he's Duke Baxter Band, and he's doing that thing, and he's teaching. And I fantasize about hitting the lottery, getting Professor Spoon back together, getting them tuned up and getting them tight again, and just paying them for that, you know, 6-month process. just so they could play a show for me, you know. That would make me happy. It would. I promised you that I would play the song Danny at the end of the podcast. I told you the story about it already. If you've forgotten, that's not my problem. And you're a dick. No, I'm kidding. You're not a dick. I don't remember things a lot of the time. But I feel like maybe you weren't listening. And then you're just kind of a dick. Anyway, here's Danny, which is a song about a dick.
To bread eater, nothing more, nothing less. I got the 2 shoes on my feet. I left my home in downtown. I can be found walking around town. Tell me, what am I to do when it's all because of you? And I hope you like the view, 'cause I'm living on the outside now. Danny, your face is turning blue.
obviously, when I said this was a song about a dick, I didn't mean it was about a literal penis. It was about a guy acting like a dick. Although, I don't know. I don't know why it's so, why our genitals are considered so negative. You know, what, you're a pussy, you're cock's cock. You know, those should be compliments. I love pussies and cocks. They're great things. They give us pleasure. Why are we so negative about it? Get on a positive tip, everybody. I said tip after talking about cocks. Anyway, that's the show, and that's my meandering discussion of Darren Buck and his music, and you know, Darren, if you listen to this, and one, thanks for letting me use your music, and two, I love you, man. I love you so much, and I miss you. And one of these days, if I get rich, Professor Spoon is going to play again, my friend. Professor Spoon will play again. Well, this is the first in what is to be a long series about my favorite musicians. And other musicians I'm going to talk about are Irish folk singer named Susan McCown. I am going to talk about a folk rocker that Darren and I both had a personal relationship named Martin Sexton. This is all contingent on, I'm going to reach out and see if they mind if I put a couple of their songs on this podcast. Hopefully they will. Who knows? Who knows? But if they say yes, then I will be talking about those two. I'll also be talking about a number of other people. Matt King, for example, who is a alternative country guy who I really dig. And a guy named Rochambeau, who's hosted this, and a musician that he works with named who calls herself Wendy Sweetlove, who also hosted the Toncast. You can look back in the archives to listen to those. Wendy Sweetlove, very, very beautiful woman, and sweet as pie. Sweet as pie. She's a keeper. Whoever gets to keep her is lucky, because she's a keeper. And of course, my wife, who's also a keeper, and is the sweetest piece of ass in the whole wide world, is also a backup singer for Rochambeau. I'll talk about him. You think I've been drinking all day? I'm just sleepy, you guys. No, I've been drinking all day. I'm hammered right now. I'm also on heroin, and I'm about to take some ecstasy. Anyway, so I'll be talking about them, and then I will be talking about a musician whose name is Adam Blau. I don't know if you've heard him, but one of his compositions goes a little like this.